The spirit of performance is what defines Acura. And now, it's electric. Introducing the ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.
Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Hoosier Huddle podcast. I'm your host, Sammy Jacobs. TJ Inman will be in shortly to break down the Ohio State-Indiana game yesterday. This is our post-game show. Yesterday, Indiana fell at the Horseshoe 38-17 in a hard-fought loss to the number two Buckeyes, who are arguably the best team in the country, along with Alabama. Michigan is probably in the conversation as well. TJ, how are you?
I'm doing well. Not quite the game we expected yesterday, and that you ended up feeling kind of frustrated at the end of it. Indiana had some chances to put the outcome of that one in doubt. I don't know if Ohio State fans ever felt truly threatened, but you had a chance to cut that game to 7 with under 10 minutes to play. Indiana wanted to make it a fourth quarter game, and they were able to do that and almost had a chance to get that down to a single possession game. So you're left feeling a little bit frustrated by that, but overall encouraged by the performance. At least I was. I mean, people are allowed to make their own opinions, but I think overall you have to be encouraged by the way Indiana battled yesterday. And they gave Ohio State a real test, and I think I doubt the Ohio State coaches are feeling too great about the way their team performed yesterday, particularly on the offensive end. I think the IU defense had a lot to be proud of yesterday.
Yeah, and you hit the nail on the head there in terms of frustration. It's something that I've seen on a lot of comments on our post-game pieces, TJ, or, people rightfully complaining about the play calling, but then, there's other people who are like, listen, you went toe-to-toe with the number two team on the country in their place, and how do you not feel encouraged by it? I see both sides. It was frustrating in terms of, IU just couldn't get anything going on the ground. The play calling was, some of it was great, and then some of it was not so great.
Yeah.
You had a great play to Danny Friend in the third quarter for a touchdown. That tunnel screen to Ricky Jones, where if he had a little bit more speed, probably gets into the end zone. But then in the red zone play calling, I don't know if they trust Lego in the red zone anymore after, what we saw against Wake Forest. You saw after the fumble, Indiana had a chance to get out in front by 7 points, which I thought would have been huge. Instead of, kicking a field goal, you had a chance to get that there that you ran 7 times. A couple of them were good runs, but Devine Redding's not the kind of back, and we've said this over and over again, he's not explosive enough and very few running backs are to beat a team like Ohio State with that speed to the outside. And, you're missing two of you're basically missing your right side of your offensive line, and you can't run it. So they ran it 7 times. I think they got 20 yards and ended up with a short field goal, but man, punching it in there after getting the takeaway really would have, on the short field, really would have, put Ohio State in a bind a little bit. It was their first deficit since, I believe, the opening game against Bowling Green. So it's a spot that they're not used to. But otherwise, the defense played the tails off. It was great to see. Riding in the elevator from the press box with some fans from the suites and stuff, they were impressed by the IU defense. This is, they're Ohio State fans. Some of them are very reluctant to praise IU in that their defense played well. Instead, they're asking, why did we only put up 38 points on Indiana? If this is Indiana. Well, Indiana's defense,
yeah, realistically, which, it was 24. I mean,
yeah, it was 24. You had two drives start inside the 10, I believe, is at the 6, one at the 6, and then one at the 9. The one yep. drive shouldn't have even happened because, you know,
no.
Big Ten refs on the fumble that should have been an incomplete pass, but they called it a fumble on the field, and apparently there was not enough evidence on replay to overturn it. Again, this is just, look, if you can't get the call right, why bother?
Yep.
It wastes everybody's time. It's one of the drawbacks from college football. If you cannot get the call correct, why bother having replay? Especially in a game where, you know, that turned the game into 10-3. Indiana, they probably don't get the first down. You know, you punt, who knows what happens. Ohio State might kick a field goal. They might score a touchdown, or they might punt. So, but overall, I'm, you know, our goal, I think, TJ, and I think we both agreed on this, was put together a good performance, don't embarrass yourself, and come out healthy. And I think, as gutless as that sounds a little bit, but I think that was accomplished. They got out with holding their heads high, and we saw, at least down on the field, after the game, I saw Tom Allen, as soon as the clock hit zero, ran out and was slapping his players on the chest and telling them that they fought hard, you know, hold your heads high. And Wilson said in the post-game press conference, and I asked about that, you know, this was a game that maybe a year or two ago turns into like the Michigan State game last year, where it was close.
Yes.
And then they just fall apart in the last 6 minutes, and it turns into 56 or 52-26 or something like that, where it could have ended 49-17 or 52-17, and just that's an ugly score, as opposed to 38-17, and the defense played hard for 60 minutes.
Yeah, the possession where that really, I thought, could have happened. Ohio State had just had probably their best drive of the day. Indiana had cut the lead down, and Ohio State had had probably their best drive of the day. And at that point, I'm not entirely sure on how much time was left, but Indiana's offense went 3-and-out, and Ohio State gets the ball back with decent field position. I think in years past, you would have seen them just be able to keep pounding the ball for another, you know, 7-play, you know, 65-yard drive, whatever they had to go, score another touchdown within a couple minutes, and then, you know, like you said, it falls apart. Instead, Indiana's defense forces them into a 3-and-out, and I think forced them into 2 more 3-and-outs right after that. So not only did they not fall apart, they really just continued to hold Ohio State's offense largely in check until Ohio State scored a touchdown late in that game, like 3 minutes left, 4 minutes left, something like that on a pass.
Yeah.
But the performance of the secondary. Yeah. Yeah. The performance of the secondary.
And that was on a short field too.
Right. Yep. The performance of the secondary yesterday was tremendous. And the front line gets credit for that as well, because they were able to pressure Barrett much more than I think anyone anticipated. The ESPN announcers, which, take it for what you will, but I think Brock Heward is a pretty good analyst. I think he does a nice job. He prepares for it. He's not just an ex-athlete that goes out there and shows up on Saturday and talks. He prepares for it, you can tell. And he was very impressed by Indiana's defensive line, particularly Nate Hoff and Ralph Green. He said that they, you know, did a very nice job matching up physically with Ohio State's interior offensive line, and I think he's absolutely right. And then the secondary did a wonderful job. The standout for me back there was A'shaun Riggins. I thought he had a great game.
He did, and it was his first career start, too, as a true freshman in the horseshoe. He played tremendously. He only had 3 tackles, but he had that interception where he could have gotten in for six. He just got tripped up at the 14 or so, and then he made a tremendous play, I believe, nearing the end of the half in the end zone he pass breakup that Jonathan Crawford nearly picks off afterwards. A'shaun Riggins is really good, and he started. And you know what was else good to see was Tyler Green back in the mix. People might have missed him playing, but he trotted out on the field, I think, at one point and stopped one of the deep passes.
Perfect.
He had no other stats other than the pass breakup, but it was good to see him back in the mix after I don't think he's played since FIU.
No, he got burned against the Panthers and hasn't seen the field since.
Yeah, so yep. I think maybe he had a good week of practice. It's good to see a guy like that bounce back and go on it and go step to step. It wasn't like the ball was underthrown and, he caught up with the receiver. He was going step to step, step in step with that receiver and made a tremendous play. And Rashard Fant was great, as he has been all year. I believe he's either the conference leader or one of the top guys in the conference in pass breakups this season. Mm-hmm. So I want to, shout out to the defensive line, because they've been playing really, really well, TJ, like you said.
Yep.
And it's a unit that came into the year with low expectations as far as from outside perspective. They lost you lose guys like Darius Latham, Nick Mangieri, Zach Shaw, Darius Rayner, basically four starters. And you bring back Ralph Green and Robert McCray was hurt, but he came back and played yesterday. And had three tackles. But, man, guys like Patrick Dougherty, I think I was talking to Matt Weaver yesterday, and he pointed out that, when IU went to Missouri and won, they played like 69 or 70 guys, and the only guy to not play was Patrick Dougherty. So to see him be on the field and making impact plays 2 weeks in a row against tough Big Ten competition is huge. And that's a real testament to what Mark Hagan, the defensive line coach, and what Tom Allen has done to this defense is, they took a guy like Patrick Dougherty, who is, he's a decent player, but they've made him into a guy who can make impact plays and will play, their hearts out for this staff. So, Ralph Green was good too. And, you saw there was one drive, TJ, I think it was in the second quarter, where two consecutive sacks or tackles for a loss, where Barrett was passing and then tried to scramble. And in years past, I think that play, they missed the arm tackles. And you saw Nate Hoff get the two TFLs. They only credited him with one sack, but two tackles for loss. But, in years past, you see them jump out of those arm tackles. And it was good to see them tackle this well. And I think, now you're five games in. It's not a fluke anymore. It's this defense is playing really well.
Yep. I'll ask you a question. Do you think that Ohio State will have, because they ended up with, 393 total yards?
383, I believe.
383, okay. Do you think that they will have fewer yards than that in any game they play the rest of the regular season?
Maybe against Michigan? Maybe
they won't have
Michigan.
Fewer passing yards. They will not have fewer passing yards than what they had yesterday.
The pass defense was a couple.
Now, Barrett, I'll be fair. Barrett missed a couple. He missed a couple of deep throws. It was windy yesterday, so he missed a couple of deep throws. But really, for the most part, I credit pressure from Indiana, scheme from Tom Allen and play calling there, diving up the right pressures at the right time, and then pass coverage and pressure from the defensive line. It was a very strong performance. So, definitely good to see.
Yeah, and
go ahead.
Yeah, it was good to see. And speaking about the wind, and people will transition to kickoffs here in a second. That wind, I was down on the field before the game, and it was coming out of one side, and it bounced off the stands, and it was like getting hit with two different, you know, from two different directions with the wind. So it was very tricky down there, and it was really weird feeling to feel two breezes coming at you almost at the same time. But, yeah, let's get to the kicking game. I thought the turning point of the game, TJ, you know, after IU cut it to 17-10 with I think a minute and 3 seconds left on the pass to Page, which is a beautiful throw, a beautiful route. The Ohio State returns the kick, I believe, to the 5 or 6 yard line. Paris Campbell. It was a great return, but you know the questions about Griffin Oakes are flying around. You know, this is a guy who had most of his kicks the majority of his kicks were for touchbacks. I believe it was 57% last year. This year he's around 66. But yesterday, I don't think either kicker had kickoffs for touchbacks. OSU had one. OSU had one, according to the stat sheet, that went for a touchback.
They also had one go out of bounds.
Yes. So it was a tough win day. I think Wilson said in the postgame show that kickoff got caught in the breeze and brought back to a side where they weren't planning on covering. The trick on kickoff coverage is that your kicker has to kick it to the spot where you're going to cover and everybody's going to go get it. If the ball goes somewhere else or you shank it, you're in trouble and you have to adjust. And you know, there were a couple missed tackles. There might have been a couple holding calls as well that the referees missed. But, you know, that was just absolutely killer. Instead of being down 17-10, getting the ball back at halftime, you're back to where you started at 24-10. They ultimately made it 24-17. And then, you know, they just
great
couldn't
drive.
Get anything.
That was a great drive.
That was.
That
it was 24 best
to 10,
drive of the game.
Absolutely. Yeah,
best
was,
drive in the game. They hit. Was that the drive they hit Nick Westbrook down in the on for 50 yards? A terrific drive, and it showed you the fight on this team. It was 13 plays, 89 yards, took almost 5 minutes. You know, for a little bit there, the game almost went into a shootout mode. As you know, between late second quarter and mid third quarter, you know, there were 5 touchdowns. It's on 6 drives, if you want to call Indiana's drive there at the end of the half a drive, and then it just went into defense mode. Whether or not Ohio State got conservative, you were saying that IU got them out of their game plan, they wanted to rush JT Barrett 15 times. He ended up with 26 rushes. And, you know, that's good to see that IU could take away something and make Ohio State do something that they didn't really want to do.
Right. Yeah, 2 points from the broadcast for people that were listening to the ESPN commentators. Now, you know, some of this could be coach speak. I understand that. Take it for what you will. But Urban Meyer told Brock Heward before the game that Indiana would, quote, undoubtedly be the best team that we play, or without a doubt be the best team that we play so far. Now, keep in mind, they've played Oklahoma. So, okay, take that for what you will. And Indiana did play them tougher than Oklahoma did, to be fair. The second point was that Brock Heward was told by the, I don't know if it was by Urban Meyer or the offensive coordinator, I don't know, but Ohio State, their wish was to limit JT Barrett's runs, like you said, to about 15. So for Indiana to, you know, and that could mean 16, 18, but 26, that's more than they had anticipated, more than they wish. you know, they don't really have a backup option behind JT Barrett, so they want to obviously limit the amount of hits that he takes throughout the season so that he'll be, you know, healthy for the remainder of the campaign. So Indiana forced him to do things that they weren't necessarily prepared to do, and that's because really they did a really good job of limiting explosive plays from Samuel and Weber and Barrett. You know, they had a few, but nothing huge. And then their receivers really offered nothing to Indiana's secondary. Noah Brown was shut out. It was a very encouraging performance by the defense, both in game plan and execution. And I think it offers a lot of continued optimism for that unit moving forward. And I think, you know, Big Ten fans might want to, and IU fans, I do think it's okay. I know we're all very, you know, naturally pessimistic about the defense at Indiana, but I do think it's okay to start to recalibrate your expectations for IU on the defensive side of the ball.
Yes, and I think the coaching staff has done that. This is 2 weeks in a row where Wilson's play calling has been super conservative, it seems.
Yeah.
And is trusting the defense, starting to play. It's total opposite of last year where he was going for things on fourth and six and above, faking a punt inside their own 20, where they had no faith in that defense. And
yeah.
And, you know, it's now to the point where, you know, they need to find a middle ground. Yeah, you could trust your defense and still make, you know, still not be conservative. And that's something that, you know, to me was the most frustrating part is that this game was right there. It was mm-hmm. right there where maybe if you take a few more shots and throw the ball downfield, maybe you just break a play and score a touchdown and make that a one-score game, maybe get an onside kick, do something funky, make a stop, get the ball back, take another stop, and steal a win. That's what I think.
Yeah.
I think fans are frustrated about, and it's good. It's good for Indiana football to have fans that are frustrated about a loss to Ohio State, is that they care, and that's what the expectation level of this program is now, is that we want to go into these venues and beat these teams. And, you know, that to me was the most frustrating part. It was seeing that IU had a chance to go up seven early. They ran the ball. They had a chance to make it a one-score game in after the Riggins pick. And
yeah.
They, you know, they had the one pass play, which was just a brutal play call. I don't think that tight end wheel route was very good. A very good play call down with that little room. That's a play that needs some space to get developed. I'd like to have seen something with a slant or something underneath, maybe
yep.
the page or to find Westbrook on the other side. But man, that's the frustrating part is that game was right there for the taking. And it just weren't aggressive enough in the play call, and maybe going on for it on fourth and two. Ohio State had 11 guys in the box. That's a play where,
yep.
you know, I know you don't want to mention Xander or, you know, other guys, but maybe having a package where you have a guy who could do play action, maybe calling it with Lego and having it, you know, call it the line. Here's what you see. If you see this, we're going to roll out and hit Danny Friend or one of the tight
yep.
ends. Or a receiver for a touchdown, or, you know, just if you think you're going to, you know, get some push on the line up under center and sneak it. You know, you're snapping the ball 5 yards back and trying to run 6 yards to get 1 yard, and that's not going to
yeah.
work against a defense against Ohio State. So there's a lot left to be desired from the play calling, but you know, it's a good thing to be frustrated a little bit, especially against a team against Ohio State. It just means your program has bigger expectations. You could
yeah.
be,
yeah.
you know, look, we could be Rutgers right now. And,
well, yeah. And we have.
And I, yeah. Well, I hate to tell you, I told you so, but I told it so.
You did. Yeah, you got that one right. Last podcast, you said that you thought Rutgers was probably worse than Purdue at this moment, and it definitely appears that they are. And yeah, that's one that suddenly a 50-50 game on the road looks like one that you really definitely should win. Now, long time between now and then, so a lot can change week to week, especially month to month when you're talking about college football. So we'll see, but that's one that you'd like to think, if it were played next week, Indiana would be heavily favored. So that's a positive. I think the biggest area for concern moving forward is definitely zone offense.
They were 3-for-4 in the red zone. I mean, I know it's a concern. I know they got a field goal and missed that thing, but 3-for-4 is better than they have been all season. And it is
absolutely
a concern.
Yeah. Yeah.
The play,
it's
I think
improving.
The play calling in the red zone is a concern, and maybe their trust in Legault throwing it in the red zone is a concern. But, I mean, I was shocked to see that they were 3-for-4 in the red zone.
Yeah, it is improving. That's a plus because it has gotten a lot better since the first week, and you would expect that. And I would anticipate that it would continue to improve. I really think that they need to give Legault a chance to throw the ball inside the 20 or utilize some different running backs inside of the 20, you know, maybe give Clyde Newton a chance. I don't know, but I don't think that Divine Redding power back on short yardage situations is really working all that well. Now, having Dan Feeney back, which, you know, we hope is next Saturday, having Dan Feeney back should make a difference in those situations. And for the offense in general. So that's a plus. And like you said, I think it is improving, and it must be said, Ohio State so far is the best defense in the country on short yardage rushing situations and red zone rushing situations. So, you know, getting stuffed by them is not some shame and embarrassment, but it is something that if you are hoping to match and then raise what you accomplished last season, you can't continue to leave points on the field in tight games, because it's going to continue to be tight games. You know, Nebraska should be a close game. Northwestern on the road should be a close game. Maryland should be a close game. You know, the rest of this month, I would say, are fairly, you know, 50-50 toss-up games. Nebraska's going to be favored coming here, and I said I thought there was a chance they'd be top 10, and they might be. Because you had Houston lose to Navy. You had Miami lose to Florida State. That's two top 10 teams. And then Tennessee lost to Texas A&M. I don't think they should be punished for that, but they lost to A&M. So that's three top 10 teams that fell. So it's possible that they sneak in there at number 10 coming to Bloomington, which I think would be a huge opportunity for the Hoosiers against a somewhat wounded Nebraska Cornhuskers team. But the rest of this month, it's going to be tight games, and you cannot leave points on the board when you have a chance to score.
Yeah, exactly. And you're exactly correct on the schedule as well. This is now, and we have about a minute and a half left, but this is now a schedule when you're looking at it that this team could win 7 or 8 games, anywhere from 6 to 7 to 8 games, and we'll see where they go. But Nebraska coming in next week could be 4 or 5. They're just now these games are all, you know, some against tougher opponents or matchup games that could go either way. But right. You'd think that they could beat Rutgers, they could beat Purdue and steal and get a win somewhere from another one of those games. But you're right, Nebraska is coming in. We'll keep you updated on their injury status. But as far as I know, I think Westerkamp, they're one of their most important wide receivers. Seathan Carter, who's a very, very good tight end, is out. And I believe you said that one of their offensive linemen was out too. And Tommy Armstrong is dealing with an ankle injury, but he probably will be back. but we'll see if he re-aggravates that in practice. If he doesn't play that'll
Indiana
be a tough deal for Nebraska. Yes, because he makes that team go, and we'll see. They haven't had a great win either. Oregon's kind of a mess.
So I watched them against Washington. Yeah. They're awful.
We'll break down that game on Wednesday. TJ, thanks for joining me on a Sunday. Enjoy the NFL games today and enjoy the beautiful fall weather.
Absolutely. We'll have great content in our preview pod for Nebraska on Wednesday.
All right. Thanks for listening, guys. Check back at HoosierHuddle.com often this week. Don't forget that BTN Tailgate is in Bloomington this week. The show kicks off at 10:30. It goes till noon. They had some fun games and stuff. We saw it at Ohio State. It looked terrific. So stop by. There's food. There's drinks. Bring signs. So thanks for joining us on a Sunday. Enjoy the NFL games, and we'll be back on Wednesday.
There's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing!
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel, it's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
I want to tell you a story. It's a story about a scandal, broken relationships, gossip, rumors, money, corporate rivalry, and a broom. A performance-enhancing broom. My name is John Cullen. I'm a comedian, podcaster, and for 20 years, I was a semi-professional curler. And I want to tell you the story about how a single broom almost imploded the 500-year-old sport of curling.
We felt like we were bringing a knife to a gunfight.
It's the story of a superstar and his fall from grace.
Well, I was being dragged through the mud.
It's the story of two brother entrepreneurs with a dream.
Yeah, I said, that's great news.
It's a story of intrigue.
I still don't understand why we want to keep his name secret.
The full story has never been told, so I'm going to tell it. Broomgate, how a broom almost killed curling.
It was a year I'd like to forget.
To listen to Broomgate, search for Broomgate in your favorite podcast app. That's all one word, Broomgate.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.